I couldn't have picked a more perfect guest to be the first guest for 2023, Bridget Koenig. Bridget is the CEO of the Sammy D Foundation. She is a recent recipient of the South Australian's Young Achievers Award for the 40 under 40 and an amazing mama to two beautiful young ladies that are watching on as their mum shows them the path to having it all. And she's a beautiful friend of mine. I'm so excited to finally get to share her with you all. Take a listen as we talk about everything from landing the role of CEO, juggling motherhood, and while she ain't no finance manager, how numbers are important to understanding the story that they tell. I'm Amy Bajada, CPA by trade, not in nature, now financial coach to businesses globally. The Boring Shit You Need to Know in Business podcast was created with business owners and aspiring business owners in mind. It's a way to bring you simple yet effective business strategies, explore the art of being in business, and challenge the notion that our financial numbers are boring. If you're looking to improve your profitability, increase your cash, and grow your business, you're in the right place. Join me and other business owners as we discuss the boring shit you need to know in business. Hey, Bridget.
Hey, Amy.
Thanks so much. This has been a long time coming. I've asked you a few times and I was so grateful when you were finally available and able to say yes.
Yes, I succumbed to the nagging.
Well, I'm so grateful that you're here. I have got so many things I want to discuss today and I hope you're in for it. So settle in and let's get to it. I often kick off these discussions with learning a little more about my guests and how they got to where they are today. And whilst we're no strangers, as we're friends and we've known each other for quite some time now, I would love to hear your how I got here story because I don't think I know it all. So can we start there, my friend?
Oh, but how far back do you want to go?
What took you down this path do you think that was the most significant? Because here you are, CEO of a fantastic organization, the Sammy D Foundation. Tell me, what were the most significant steps for you?
Okay, well, I was working in a number of corporate organizations for many years. One of them was obviously the one I met you with and worked with some awesome people. I learned some really good skills there about building resilience, which was fantastic and has led me pretty strong into my career. But the most pivotal moment was when my mum was diagnosed with a disease in MS, and she didn't really want to accept that diagnosis. So I started to volunteer with that organization, you know, as everyone does, you know, cooks a sausage at a sausage sizzle, just to get a better understanding of what the MS Society did here in South Australia, but also bring my mum along for that ride to show her that other people, you know, you can live with MS. And I'm lucky to still have my mum around. And although she has her struggles, she is coping with MS well. But in saying that, I was working with the CEO one day, and he was like, "Oh, you've got some energy." So the next thing I knew, I was having a meeting in his office with him about what I could do or how I could support the MS Society in a bit of more of a long term. And so I ended up leaving the corporate world and jumping into not-for-profit as their sponsorship coordinator, so building up sponsorship. And that was a massive eye-opener, not one to be quiet. I'm quite opinionated, so I had my challenges there, but I definitely learned how to sell with heart and lead with heart. Yeah, and then I eventually moved on to St. John Ambulance, spent my time there in fundraising and sales and commercial side of things. I had two babies while I was at St. John Ambulance. I feel like not-for-profits are very welcoming of a part-time working mother. In saying that, I did have a manager there at one stage that said while I was a mother, I couldn't have it all. And it was from another woman, which is even worse to hear because they weren't afforded the opportunities. While I was heavily pregnant, I was promoted to the acting general manager of commercial, and I was promoted over someone that had past their time as a mother per se and looking after her children who were much older. So that was an interesting experience to show that I do believe that while you do definitely need balance, that you can still engage in anything that you really want to. So while I was on maternity leave with my second child, though, I was reached out by a recruiter who is now a friend also. He supports the foundation heavily and said, would I look at this opportunity as being a general manager of the Sammy D Foundation? They were just hoping to find someone that, yeah, wanted to work part-time but still had the opportunity of leading an organisation. They didn't have a CEO, but they wanted someone a bit more operational. So that's when I started to have conversations, and initially I said no because I had a young family and didn't think that I could give it the time and energy that it needed. But long story short, they were very convincing and I fell in love with them, and I am now here today, nearly 5 years on.
Wow, it's been 5 years already.
I know, it's coming up a couple more months, yeah.
That is awesome. I'm going to backtrack a little bit to a couple of things that you said.
Mm.
The first thing you led with was resilience as being a skill that you learned pretty early on in your career. Yeah. How has that afforded you the opportunities that you have gone after in your life?
Well, I had some pretty big managers, big personalities. I had some people in some of the organisations I work with that taught me to never take the first or second no, to always continually, if you really, really, truly believe in it, to continually to go after that with respect, however. So that was really good. And that failing does happen. And in fact, you learn a lot from that. And it's okay to still acknowledge that, you know, you have not been as successful as you wanted, or, you know, it didn't go the way you planned, but doesn't mean you can't still get there. So you just, it might not be this linear line. It may be one that goes a bit like this instead.
I think the linear line is a bit of a myth, I believe, having had a bit of a career myself. I think it's definitely a myth.
That's it. And I think that we need to talk about that a little bit more, because, you know, things like LinkedIn allow us to promote our successes, don't they? But we don't really talk about the ones where things don't go always to plan. So,
and that's our social media society as well, isn't it? Mm. You know, like, I know we're a bit of a difference in age, but I do know that you would
not
have
really.
Had, well, kind of, but I do know that you would have had, you know, the childhood that I had, where you had these cameras that you couldn't go back and delete 15 shots before you got the perfect shot. And I think what you're saying resonates a lot with that, is that we do tend to just go for the positives in so many ways without really understanding how we get to the positives through all of the stuff that we learn along the way.
Yeah.
Do you miss corporate? I think I know the answer to this, but
I am very fortunate that I get to work with people that are in corporate scenarios and situations, and they're massive supporters of the foundation. So I feel like I get my energy through that. I have a board of directors who are all but one of them are in a corporate setting. So they come with their ideas. So I feel like I get the best of both worlds. Do I miss sometimes having the resourcing of a corporate? Hell yes. But I don't work very well with a lot of red tape. And I really feel like having profit for purpose, and where you can see the impact of your dollar, and you can see your organization changing lives, that's pretty hard to top in a corporate organization.
I was going to say, even just listening to that makes it pretty hard to top, I think, from a corporate perspective.
Yeah, definitely.
Can I ask you, because the whole term part-time and CEO
does
not often go hand in hand.
No.
How does that work? Let's break that down a little. And it could still exist outside of a mother or a carer role type of thing. I don't think, you know, you mentioned that they wanted a part-timer to begin with. So it wasn't something that just was relative to your situation. So tell me a little bit about that and how that works with the foundation.
Yeah. So initially they were looking for a part-time general manager just because of the affordability and the lack of funding that they had at the foundation. So they didn't want to promise someone like a full-time role when, one, they wouldn't have the work for a full-time person, but two, they couldn't afford it. So initially that's why they did that, I believe. And I believe I was the only mother in the mix, to be honest. They had people probably on the end of their working career more so than the start of their, well, not start, but like their trajectory into their career. Like I was, I guess. And how did that work? So about a year and a half ago, they gave me a different title into CEO. And the difference between a general manager and a CEO, mostly in our organization for explanation, is I'm not as operational, and I have a team that I work alongside of that's able to deliver more operational tasks than I am. And I've got a number of other duties to support them and help build them up and into their roles. But part-time initially for me was like 24 hours a week. And then as the organization grew and I had greater capacity and I wanted to work more, we kept re-looking and revisiting my job role and my hours. Right now, I hope they're happy for me to share, but the flexibility now is if I'm needed full-time and the business needs me full-time and I believe that it needs me, then I will work full-time and I'll be paid full-time. And then in our quieter periods, which is rare, or times of when I need to be with my children or school holidays or anything like that, then I can go back into my part-time-ish type of role, which is, you know, in the 30-hour-ish, 30, 35 hours. So, yeah, I'm very lucky that I've got a flexible board that I work alongside of, who are very probably more forward-thinking than a lot of others from traditional board settings. But it is very flexible, and I afford the same flexibility whether you work in the 7DE Foundation part-time or full-time or casual, that we all have families and family comes first. Work is secondary to that.
I think, you know, you keep using this term flexibility, and it's coming up a lot lately in the business world, or just in, you know, employment in general, where we're going in this country, we're going through such a tough spell when it comes to employment. But I also think that it being so tough is that people are looking for that opportunity of flexibility. Yeah. We've come off of COVID, especially here in Victoria. I know you guys didn't have it as bad as we did, but, you know, so many people got used to being available to their family. Their priorities started to change. And now all of a sudden they're looking for employers that are opening up that flexibility. What would you say to an employer who doesn't want that now? Like, we've been able to prove that it's worked, and that it, you know, we're able to get through to some degree most organizations, and I know there's a need for people to be on site. It's this idea of flexibility, and I was talking about flexibility long before COVID even hit, because being a mum myself, you know, it's tough. It's so tough to balance it. What would you say to employers that were thinking?
Well, I would say that if you aren't offering that flexibility, you're going to miss out on some really good people. I can give an explanation here, and she would be happy for me to share it, is that when I first started working here, there was four employees, and this person was turning up late continually, and obviously asked why that was happening before anything else. And this person explained to me that they don't work well in the mornings, and they work best at night. And she was leading a team at the time, and her team were here in the mornings, etc. So long story short, but eventually she petered out of that role, and we looked at another role, and she's just recently come back, but she works best at night. So she now works, and she writes the most brilliant grant applications. She does policies, procedures. That's her baby. She loves that. But she does that at night time, and then I come in the morning and I review it, and then I can send it back. Not always can the business afford to do that all the time, but in most cases, if that's when someone works best and you can, and there is a role for them to do that, why wouldn't you? It's just like, I guess each individual person, you sign them up to a new employment agreement, it would just be setting those expectations quite early, and just like you would negotiate pay, you negotiate time of working hours. Yeah, so I get the best out of our team by giving them flexibility as long as deadlines are met and timelines are reached, yeah.
Oh, it's so refreshing to hear that. And that, no disrespect to anyone, but it wasn't around kids. It was around something that was tangible, like someone's skill set and their opportunity.
Yeah, her kids are older. That's right. Yeah. And that's just when her, even I think her family are all night hours, that's who they are, that's how they work, and that's how they work best. So however, was in here before me this morning, I might add, at 8:30. So sometimes it just works differently. Yeah.
And look, whilst we're on that, you know, I'd love you to talk just a little bit about the Sammy D Foundation, because I think it's something that, you know, really resonates with me when I've learned more about it through you. Tell me more about it.
Well, the name Sammy D Foundation will never change, because a young man lost his life by the name of Sam Davis in 2008 when he was hit from behind, just one single punch, at a party in a very nice suburb here in Adelaide. He wasn't aggravating one person at all. It was just a house party and some gatecrashers came in. Sam lost his life that night, and his parents lost their son. And they started this foundation firstly so that his friends didn't go out and seek retribution. They created it so that his friends and family had something positive to do. Secondly, they didn't want anyone else to go through the pain that they'd experienced of losing their son and their grandparents losing their grandson and his friends. He was a very well-loved young man, up-and-coming AFL player being looked at by some Victorian AFL teams and a local South Australian team here. So, yeah, he lost his life. His parents didn't want that to happen again. So they started a foundation, started sharing his story. And from there, the organisation started creating bullying prevention programs, more violence prevention programs, alcohol and other drug education programs, and also mentoring at-risk young people so that they can intervene there. But most of our programs are about prevention. So we're preventing these incidents from happening again, giving kids the tools on what to do if they're in an unsafe situation, or how even to defuse a situation before then, or acknowledge that their mates might be quite fully charged right now. How do we get them out of there potentially hurting someone? So just some real life stuff that we deliver in schools and sporting clubs to prevent violence from happening. And now we aspire for all young people to live a life free of violence. That's really why we do what we do. And we are coming into other states in the near future, delivering into the Northern Territory in 2023 again for the second year. And we actually are delivering a pilot in New South Wales as well in the middle of this year too. So we're looking at expanding our reach because we know our programs work and they reduce violence in our community. So why wouldn't we want to share that with the world?
Yeah, and I'd love for you to come to Victoria, that's for sure. I've recently, as you know, my son Isaac, he's 10 now, and you know, we've had real conversations around the fact that as a 10-year-old now, you can be charged, and that, you know, actions have ramifications. You know, yeah. I'm not necessarily going on the side of my son. My son's quite the opposite. He's non-confrontational. But I don't want him to be a target. And so we've talked about responsible reaction to certain things that may be happening, whether it be bullying, even in the yard at school, because it's happening to him, it's happening to others, and it starts ridiculously early, you know. And so I guess, you know, he's heading into high school soon, and these conversations are so important that we continually have with him, that, you know, it's got to be a reasonable reaction to a situation, whether that be diffusing it by walking away, whether that be standing your ground and, you know, not retaliating in a way that's violent. And but it's only going to get worse, and it's a horrible thing. So programs like what you guys are doing sounds absolutely fantastic. They need to be in all states and territories, I think.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. It's just about, you know, building our kids up so they can make those beautiful choices and the right choices. And the parents that get to see our sessions when we're in sporting clubs, or we hear from them, the kids going home to school from school and saying, this is what I've learned today. They're conversations that their parents would have never even thought to have. Or how do you have that discussion? And how do we have those discussions with our kids? So, yeah, we're making a difference, and we hope to be making a difference in greater Australia. So,
no wonder the corporate world no longer appeals to you. That sounds really great to be a part of. But I'm going to switch gears for a moment now. You not only fill your days with the wonderful work that you're doing at the Sammy D Foundation, but you have two wonderful, the most beautiful girls in Pippa and Harper, but they keep you busy too. And, you know, I know that I look on and can see that you have it all, and it must be a huge balance. And I know that they are looking on, I'm sure, so proud of everything that you're doing. How do you look like you have it all together, and how do you juggle it? Because it's such an important role that you're playing as a mother, as a working mother, being a partner, you know, all of those sorts of things. Tell me how you do it,
Mom. That is a good question. Sometimes you just don't have it all. Sometimes you're sacrificing one for another. That is reality. But my word of 2023 is balance, because it needs to be a balance, because something tends to be robbed, like my sleep, maybe. You know, there's some nights there, but knowing that at the foundation I'm making a difference to help the lives of young people, including those of my children who are growing up, you know, they're only going into reception in year two, they're growing up in this environment. I want their lives to be safe as well. And I think it's every child's right to live a life free of violence and also go to school where they feel safe, right? And if violence and bullying are playing in there. So kind of everything does center around my kids, whether it's me physically being with them or it's me and my workplace. But I do have a good support network. Like my husband and I, we don't have a traditional relationship. Like he doesn't go out and make the money and, you know, come home at nighttime and I'm there and make dinner. That's definitely not it, and it never would be. ever, ever. We definitely tag team the drop off and the pick up and the cooking and the washing. I think a mum tends to have a bit more of a mental load than the dad, just because of the way that, especially in our relationship, the way we think about things. We're definitely a team, and we definitely play our parts and
makes
in bringing up our children.
Doesn't it? It makes a difference having that support, that immediate support, let alone the 100%. Extended support that you have.
Yeah, and I don't tend to work Fridays. Like, I never book anything in for work Fridays. So, unfortunately, media happens a lot on Fridays. So, my Fridays are cut into sometimes for, you know, whoever, whatever media kind of needs those interviews for Sammy D, but I try not to. And that's my, like, life admin day, and going to the gym and all those things to kind of look after me so that I'm a good mother and I'm a good leader and I'm a good friend and wife and family member. So, yeah, I think this year for 2023, it is balanced, because last year it definitely skewed in moments. But that was, I do believe that's because we were under-resourced here, but we're hopefully creating some awesome, more awesome people to join our team so that that doesn't happen. Yeah, I hope that explains that.
Yeah, look, I love the term life admin. I need a donkey about
Isn't that you? You are all about the life admin.
Oh, I just never called it that before.
Oh, haven't
and absolutely love it. You're right. I'm all about the scheduling. You should see my calendar. But yeah, I am. But I do love that term. I think that's it's a really great term. But you're right, you know, it's about support, it's about understanding. Balance has to play a part. You talk about gym, you've brought that up. That's obviously a happy place for you. What else do you do for yourself just to help maintain that balance?
That's a good question. It's mostly around that exercise component for me. If I don't have that, then I do feel my mental health does suffer. So going to the gym 3 to 4 times a week, I'm lucky as well that my kids can come and see that also. So I involve them a part of that community so that they can also work, like, you know, do some exercise with me, or they can watch, or they can build some friendships through the gym community as well. So that's the main one I do for myself. Yeah, when they're with me or when they're not as well. So.
Oh, that sounds amazing. And you've moved recently closer to the beach, so your life's changed somewhat again. And I watch on, like I said, you know, I have to turn off your stories sometimes because I've got so much FOMO going on, because it looks so beautiful all the time where you're located. So I can imagine that plays
in. You can move to Adelaide and come and live near the beach, Amy.
We could. I know my partner certainly wouldn't say no, that's for sure. He's definitely been on my back about it definitely recently. So more so than ever.
I look forward to hearing more about that later.
We've looked every time we come across, we look, and you know, there's this desirability about it. And then I don't know, I'm a Melbourne girl. Look at me, I'm all in black. It's just my thing.
I'm channeling you today. I'm all in black as well.
I appreciate you showing up. That's very important too, out of solidarity and support. But now I want to come to the topic that you and I have spoken about, that is one of my favorite topics ever, and one of the reasons why we touch base in relation to this podcast as well, even though I've wanted to get you on for so many other reasons, because I do admire the trajectory that your career has taken. I watch on, and hand on my heart, you know, really you're blessed because you bless others and you really put everything into what you do. But I did want to talk about, like I said, my favorite topic ever, and that's knowing your numbers. Now, you and I have spoken about this, which is why it plays into this particular episode, is that you've spoken to me about how important it is, even though you don't play a role in terms of being in the finance manager's role or an accountant's role, or you never ever have, but how over the years, and especially where you are right now, how important numbers are for you. I'm not going to put words in your mouth. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, earlier on in my career, I found numbers to be ones that are a necessity, obviously, and you need to know, you know, I think I was a area manager when I was 19 of like a retail chain, and 100% need to know my revenue numbers all the time. Like, that's something, you know, roll off my tongue, all good. So I did appreciate them then. But now in the roles that I have recently had, I've realized that numbers, in the traditional sense, not being rude here, but they kind of drain me. Like, looking, yeah, I'm just, I am 100% not that owl, that person that needs to into the nitty gritty all the time. I've got great team members, great leaders who love that, and they love that, and it fills their cup and they're energized by it. It does the flip to me. It drains me. However,
you're not alone. I'll give you that hot tip. You know,
I don't know. Does anyone admit it? I don't know.
Yeah, happily, they're happy to admit it. Happy to admit it.
Okay. But it's my responsibility to know my numbers and to know where we're at any stage. And so I've kind of flipped it on its head a little bit, because I feel like I love to tell stories, and I'm a bit of a person, we call them here, and like I'm a bit more peacocky, loves to use their hands and tell stories and have fun and team orientated type people. So now I use my numbers to tell stories. So I look at my numbers, I look at my revenue, I look at my expenditure, I can then able to tell a story with my numbers versus the traditional sense on, you know, however other people say it. It just doesn't enthuse me. Whereas if I can tell a story around our numbers and explain why things are doing the way they're going, or, you know, how we're going to change that trajectory, or, you know, how potentially if we're not making money here, how can we save it over here, and just create a story around ultimately still increasing our impact at the same profit ratio.
Does it still bore you?
Not really. Now, I actually, do you know what? I love my numbers now, because I've acknowledged that while I need to have all these reports, that I know I now create a report that I can tell my story from, and I know all the numbers and I know where the gaps are or where we're going really well. I can explain it to my team. I don't have to be an accountant to understand where our cash flow is at, what our balance sheet looks like, what our P&L is saying. You can be really creative with numbers, as you know. You can make it tell whatever story you want. However, it's really good to be able to understand that and be able to talk to people in our organisation, but also our donors want to know where our money's going. So that's been really good to be able to explain to them as well. So
I love that you say that. And in particular, I'm interested or intrigued where you say you've created a report that makes more sense to you. I often say to a lot of people I work with, if something doesn't make sense to you, make sure that it does. Now, I can understand that we have to subscribe, and a lot of these online platforms and you know, finance systems usually go straight to your profit and loss, straight to your balance sheet. But I think the gap in terms of understanding all of that is that that's just the basis. And when you buy an off-the-shelf product like Xero or MYOB or any type of accounting product, they're going to have to provide those to you. But I love the fact that you have acknowledged that when you can't get what you want out of something, instead of just sitting back and saying, well, this thing should have everything for me, you create reports to actually give it meaning.
Yeah. And I've had the support of our finance director, who's on our board as well. He is, in the traditional sense, loves his numbers. He could tell you any other which way, just like yourself.
Yeah.
So it's great to have the support of someone like yourself, and also Nick being able to go through that and understanding it. But he's also an Excel whiz as well. So we've been able to kind of create a template now that I've got a bookkeeper that's able to place all of that data in, that then spits out a report, or spits out, there's an iteration of reports step by step. So I can look at any which way. I can roll up all my numbers, let's say it's all office expenditure or whatever it is, into one kind of grouping. And then if I want to see what that looked like for the month, I can drop it down and see all the beautiful ins and outs there as well, which has been very fantastic. And my board only sees a certain level of reporting as well. They don't go into the detail of how much did we spend on toilet paper this month or anything like that.
And they don't need to. There are some people who don't need to know all the numbers to be fully versed in where you are
from,
and to be able to support that journey, I think. And
that's exactly right. And I think it gets too operational if they do see that. In saying that, they can if they wish as well. Yeah. We've got the reports to show them that.
That's great too. You know, some people tend to hide a lot or keep a lot close to their chests. But you talk about Excel. You know, I remember talking to someone a couple of years ago who thought Excel was on its way out. Like, we got these really great whiz-bang online systems, and I keep hearing time and time again how people are identifying with the fact that, you know, again, there's that limitation, but Excel can do so much. And when you've got a whiz on hand to be able to just create what you need to create, but also Excel's not too bad to learn, I think, at an intermediary level anyway.
That's right. When I was in corporate, I got this new gig and they hired me to do a data role. Would you believe it? All about numbers. but all about numbers that I then had to train salespeople on the gaps for the products for their customers through this data. So ultimately, I learned how to tell a story from the data to explain to salespeople where their gaps were, right? And I had to do some courses in Excel because that was not my baby. So yeah, I did a couple of day courses, and that has sustained me to now. So I definitely agree that Excel has a place. I just did my team's KPIs all on Excel so we can filter and they can see their other leaders' KPIs as well. So it definitely has a place.
Yeah, and you can build on it. Like, and it's something that can be there and you can show the next year and the next year. I'm a big advocate for Excel. I think so many things can be done on it. You know, I think the thing about numbers is that once they land in your system, it's done, it's historical. So being able to tell stories about it and being able to pull the information that's necessary to say, well, this is what we're going to do with this information. We can't do anything about it in terms of change the world that's past, but we can make a difference going forward. And I think that's the key when you're talking about how your numbers talk to you. It's not about changing them because they're sunk, they're done, they're, you know, you've made the decisions. Now it's about being able to make future decisions. And you'd be surprised or not, who knows, at how many people ignore that because they're not interested. They don't want to know. And it's one of those things where they don't even want to face some of the decisions that they've made. But I think it empowers you more. Numbers empower you 100%. To move forward, even if you have made
that's
past.
That's very true. We got a significant funder in last year. So just after you set the budget, something else jumps in and you're like, oh, how do we do this? So instead we just did a reforecast on what those numbers now look like moving forward. And we, throughout the year, compared against forecast and compared against original budget so that we could see where we were at. And we ended up landing in between both of those numbers. But yeah, I definitely do look at reforecasts, and I tend to do a forecast for the board a couple of times a year as well, based on how we're trajectorying, how we're achieving those technical targets.
And you do need to be have that flexible thinking. I know building a budget can be tedious and can take a really long time to get to. So the last thing you want to do is on the 1st of July, when everything changes, is, you know, flip on its head and say, well, that was a waste of my time. It's not a waste of your time because you thought
not at all.
Time was right. It's just being able to understand the gap. But people like me appreciate you, Bridget, in so many ways, especially when you want to know your numbers, because I think it's so important that so many people see it differently and reshape the way they look at it rather than just go straight to the boring. Before we wrap this up, I do want to ask you two questions.
Okay.
If you're not at the gym and if you're not working and playing with your kids, what other things do you love to do?
Do you know what I've started doing, but it's only fairly recent, is reading. I've been reading books. Uh-huh. I've read nearly 8 in a month.
Wow.
So that's, I know, I'm not watching TV though.
Yeah.
But I'm not just scrolling on my phone anymore. So that's why I'm trying to say balance this year, because I just want to be doing good stuff around my body. But I'll be training for the New Zealand trek that I'm doing. Did you see that?
I did see that. When's that, October?
Yes. That is going to be huge. Two lots of 65K cycles.
Wow.
A 40K raft and a 12K trek that's like really steep.
No. I'll be looking.
So that's all I can think of now.
Admiring. I'm not going to participate in anything like that, but I will look on and admire. So there you go. That's something to focus on. Well, my second question was a book that you could recommend.
I'm not going to recommend any business books right now.
Okay.
I've read a few, but I'm not loving anything right now. I have just read the two Colleen Hoover books that have gotten good ratings. Have you read it yet?
No, I haven't.
It Ends With Us.
Yes.
And then It Starts With Us.
Starts With Us, yep.
Yeah, so trigger warning if anyone is going to be reading It Ends With Us. There's a lot of domestic violence. So that caught me a bit off guard because I didn't get a heads up on that one. But It Ends With Us was a great sequel or follow-up to that. You needed to read that consecutively straight after the other, which I did, and I loved it. And I would love to see more about that couple forever. I feel like they're a part of my life. So that was the one that I read in 2 days or 3 days, I think.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. I know. Where do you find the time? That's when I don't get sleep, when I read those books. So they've been really good. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks for the recommendation. I'll have to have a look at it.
If you have time. Do you have time to read?
Well, maybe not. No. Well, yeah, maybe I should. I should make more time. I just recently read the Matthew Perry book. Yeah, autobiography. Not a fan. Not a fan.
No.
It
Of him?
well, yeah, you know, it's funny.
That
Someone,
Chandler? Is
yes,
that Chandler?
Chandler. That's Chandler. So
So now do you not like Chandler?
I loved him. I loved him, which is why I was so intrigued to read his book. But someone put it quite eloquently when they were reviewing the book, and that was that Chandler would no longer be your favorite friend at the end of it. And it was true, because his struggle and his conviction to come out of his drug struggles wasn't convincing in the end. And I think his ego kind of played the most part in the book itself. So I think that was a bit, I don't think that boded well for his, I think what he was trying to achieve with the autobiography. But I still love Friends, and I'll continue to watch Friends as a result of it. But thanks for the recommendation. And thank you so much for your time today. I know how precious it is. You could have been reading a book, but and changing the world, because this is what you do. But I appreciate you. I appreciate our friendship, and I appreciate your time here today.
Well, thank you, Amy. And thanks for everything you're doing and highlighting these people that not necessarily numbers people, but people that can still use numbers in the way that they do. And thanks for being a cheerleader always for me.
Thank you. I certainly am one of your biggest.
See you soon.
Bye. To learn more about the boring shit you need to know in business, head to my website, www.amybajada.com.au/podcast, where you will find all my latest and greatest podcast episodes for you to enjoy. To be notified of new podcast episodes when they become available, be sure to hit that notification where you're listening to this podcast. Stay well, my friend.